At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms. At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Happy New Year, happy holidays, everybody. Today, we're taking a look back at some of the most compelling conversations we've had this last year around the case against Brian Koberger.
This is the examination of the hidden human condition.
You're listening to the Hidden Killers Podcast.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi.
We are talking with Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, about the case against Brian Koberger. Koberger's defense has a 37-day stay in the proceedings as of right now to take a great look at the grand jury that was convened and how it was convened and why it was convened and if there's any biases there. Also, very much questioning a lot of facts and pointing a lot of things out there that, I don't know, are I guess I would say, squirrel-ish. Look, squirrel! Ignore all these horrible things we're hearing. Squirrel! Oh, interesting. Siobhan, all that being said, them questioning the officers' training, as three of them that were involved in the case. What is going on with the defense? What kind of strategy are they trying to employ here?
Well, you know, it sure worked for OJ, and I'm sure in a case like this, a death penalty case, they're going to do everything they can possibly come up with. So they're putting on a very aggressive defense, which we would expect, and that means attacking the DNA evidence, attacking those who collected the DNA evidence, attacking anybody who did any aspect of the investigation, if they can find that there's anything to attack, probably attacking the genetic genealogy science that was used. But, you know, from what we know at this point, it still looks like a pretty strong case against him. So I would be surprised if they come up with anything that really, you know, knocks the legs out from under it.
Is this a move of being efficient and providing a real vigorous defense, or is this more of a move of desperation?
I think it's probably what any of us would want. I mean, it's hard to put ourselves in Koberger's shoes, but I think if any of us were accused of a crime and we had a defense attorney, we would want to feel like they're doing everything they can possibly do. So it's probably people who are very dedicated to doing their utmost of what they consider their job to be.
Sure. The House, there's talk of the King Road home being torn down. It's planned for demolition, that is for sure. But as of the exact date of demolition, that's still a little bit up in the air as of this recording. What sort of value do you think having the house still standing when this eventually does come to trial? What does that give the prosecution or the defense?
Well, the only reason I can understand that there would be an argument to be made for leaving the house up during the trial would be so that the jury could actually go out, as they often do, and visit the scene, and therefore get perhaps a deeper or more fleshed out sense of exactly what we think happened. But I can certainly see for many people having that house there as a reminder is just, that's another aspect of the whole trauma, you know, looking at it. There's never going to be a way to erase the memory of what went on there. And so I can see for many people, there would be probably a very healthy eagerness to just have it taken down.
That spot's always going to be marked with sadness, whether there's a house there or not. When it comes to things like this, though, and I know, for example, in the Murdaugh trial, they brought the jury out to the barn, the shed that they the murders took mm-hmm. place in. I know that was a very emotional moment for many people. Mm-hmm. What have you seen in something like this, where a piece like that is used in the prosecution of someone in trial? Does it make a stronger case when jurors can be there, touch, see, smell, feel, be in the atmosphere where this horrible thing took place? Does it connect? I mean, does it do anything to prove that this is the person who did it, I guess? Or does it just make more of an emotional connection and make it that much more real in the minds of the jurors?
Right. I think you nailed it with the word connect. It really does allow people to feel what happened in a way that perhaps just hearing about it doesn't have the same impact on them. But again, you're right. Do we think that this is going to add anything to the burden of proof mm-hmm. when it comes to who was the perpetrator?
Yeah.
It's just why do we show autopsy pictures? You know, I mean, it hits people in the gut. It makes it very real for them what happened. And so I think I can see why prosecutors like to do that. But on the other hand, I don't see how it's going to add to the burden of proof.
Sure. Let's talk about the personality of Koberger a little bit. We've learned that in 2014, there was an arrest for stealing from his own sister. His dad is the one who even told the police about him stealing his sister's cell phone. A lot of times you'd look at this and go, well, this seems kind of like something you'd kind of handle within your family and not necessarily get the police involved. You know, what sibling stole from his sibling? Give it back. Don't do that anymore. But obviously police got involved in this struggle. What do you make of that and kind of the dynamics of that family, if this is something that he was actively doing in 2014?
Right. Well, as I understand it, this was about the time when he had been using heroin and mm-hmm. had been to rehab. And so I'm guessing there was a pattern of criminal type behavior going on. You know, often when people are using drugs like that, they steal from family members. And that's one of the hallmarks of somebody really has an addiction when they stoop to stealing from their family members. You know, that's really a red flag. So my guess is it's the kind of thing that a therapist would tell a parent to do, is if you see that kind of criminality, particularly from a mid to late adolescent, they need law enforcement intervention. You know, they need to know that there are consequences for doing this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so it very likely could have been someone involved with the Koberger family advised the father to make a police report. And that was part of the, you know, we talk about when people hit bottom, sometimes they change. That's part of the hitting bottom process sometimes, is having an interaction with law enforcement like that.
Do some people never hit bottom? Do some people just keep going and going and going?
Yeah. Sometimes there is no bottom until somebody's dead or incarcerated. And even then, it's not enough for them to gain insight and to to, you know, to change. We do know different people have different capacities for change, and different people have different bottoms. You know, for many people with a substance abuse problem, one DUI is enough, you know, and the consequences of that are so severe, they stop drinking, they sober up, or they change their ways dramatically. And then you'll see people with, you know, half a dozen DUIs, they've lost their license, and they absolutely continue what their pattern is. So it's hard to know. But I'm a big believer, you know, in families where you have substance abuse and that kind of criminal behavior, stealing or other things going on, that, yeah, getting law enforcement involvement can often be a wake up call. And in that way, you're sort of bringing the bottom up. So someone may not have to slide so low in their addiction.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, obviously, this allegedly went much further, you know, down the road. It does provide, it seems, another glimpse into the family dynamics of Koberger, his parents, and his sisters, who we've heard a little bit from here and there. We've heard specifically the rumors about at Thanksgiving, one of the sisters making the allegation that, hey, you drive the white Elantra, you're mm-hmm. coming from that exact same area. How do we know you're not the person? Mm-hmm. And then the family kind of looking a little bit more into it. It makes you wonder if the family, it makes you wonder how long the family kind of had their suspicions that maybe, you know, Brian is not always making the best of choices in his life.
Yeah, definitely. And it sounds like it, even if the parents weren't completely aware, it does sound like perhaps a sister, at least there was a sister that worked in the mental health profession. And I would think she would be noticing some red flags. It also speaks to me of, you really had a fairly normal family. Mm-hmm. And so often we think monsters are always created by this horrible, abusive childhood or whatever. And we know that that's often not true, mm-hmm. that you can get really aberrant people come out of a home where basically they were well treated. And how to explain that is where we go into the mysteries of the mind and why people veer off track developmentally so much. But there's absolutely nothing that would flag this family as a problematic family or, you know, problematic parents. Everybody said they were lovely people, you mm-hmm. know, so it's going to be something we'll be deconstructing for quite some time.
Speaking of mysteries of the mind, I'm curious to get your take on the many groups out there that are trying to exonerate Koberger, if you will. And again, he's innocent till proven guilty. And I'm all about hearing evidence that exonerates somebody if it exists. But sure, there are a disturbing amount of people online that they seem to have found some sort of community around this, but not the community of let's prosecute this person for justice. It's let's find a way to make this person not do what the allegations are against them with very flimsy to little to no evidence. I'm just shocked by the amount of people that are out there that are hanging their hat in this area, doubting 60 FBI agents, the Moscow Police Department, Idaho State Police, Pennsylvania authorities, and going on the narrative that there's some sort of conspiracy to frame Brian Koberger, of all people, just to college student, nothing special really about him, why you'd have all these people trying to conspire against him. What is that, where we see community build up around something that just, it doesn't seem like a community should be built around it, or there's no logical backing to the strength that they think they have?
You know, group dynamics on the internet, they take on this incredible life of their own, and you find the strangest things, whether it be, you know, young girls who bond over anorexia and start, they call them pro-Anna groups online, where everybody's advocating, let's, you know, lose as much weight as we can, to the point that they're killing themselves. You know, when you have the ability to connect millions and millions of people around the world online, you get a strange situation where the strangest people find each other. And the more that they share these kind of delusional or odd ideas, you know, you see it with all the different, from the flat earthers, the different conspiracy groups, the more they share these ideas, you know, normal people filter out. They, you know, they may look at something like that and go, well, this is weird, and they move on. But you have a certain kind of pathological person who will latch on to it. And then the more that they build this sense of community, they reinforce this alternate reality with each other. And I think we're going to be deconstructing the internet and the way group dynamics have impacted, from our political system to the criminal justice system to, you know, people's general mental health, the incel movement. You know, there are, have been communities on group for wannabe school shooters, you know, online. And it's just really a strange dynamic. But, you know, he's a nice looking guy. I saw him in court the other day, and I was noticing the nice suit he was in. He was very well groomed. And I thought, okay, there are going to be a bunch of needy, sad women writing him letters now. He's a handsome appearing person. A lot of people would identify with the fact that he was bullied as a younger kid when he was chubby, you know, and so people will find some aspect, you know, whether it was his weight training or whatever other kinds of things that they had in common with him or they admired about him. And they create this fantasy about who they imagine him to be. And then they bond online and you get this strange thing going on.
You're locked into the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want more? Start binging on all of our true crime podcasts right now through Apple Podcasts and get an ad-free experience when you sign up to be a True Crime Today Premium Plus member exclusively on Apple Podcasts.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast, dropping soon.
Press subscribe now.